Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into the Book of Esther today.
Always a good time.
It is. It is.
A lot of twists and turns there.
Definitely.
Lots of drama.
Yeah. So we're looking specifically at Lecture 4 by Dr. Elaine Phillips.
Oh, okay.
Which really takes us right into the heart of the story.
That's IMAX.
Yeah. All the power dynamics.
The scheming.
All the scheming.
The hidden identities.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, that epic showdown.
Yes.
Like a biblical thriller, really.
It is. And Dr. Phillips does such a good job, I think, of really unearthing all these little details that, you know, you might miss on a first read.
Yeah.
You know, like what kind of crowns they're wearing.
Oh, wow.
And then also kind of the deeper meanings behind some of the Hebrew words.
I see. I see. So it adds a new dimension, definitely.
Well, it does.
Okay. So to kind of set the stage for anyone who needs a quick refresher, we're in ancient Persia.
Okay.
Ruled by King Xerxes, and he's married to Esther, who is secretly Jewish.
Yes.
And then her cousin Mordecai, he's refused to bow down to Haman, who's the king's, like, right-hand man, basically.
Right.
And so, of course, Haman is now plotting to just wipe out all the Jews in the empire.
Yes.
And that's where Dr. Phillips' lecture really picks up, right?
Right. Right at the climax.
Okay, so we're right there with Haman.
Yeah.
Haman's walked into the king's bedroom. Ready to, like, finalize his plan to get rid of Mordecai once and for all.
Yeah, get rid of Mordecai.
What does Dr. Phillips say about this moment?
Well, she highlights the contrast between the two characters.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so you have Xerxes, who's totally self-absorbed.
I see.
Oblivious to what's going on. And then you have Haman.
Right.
Who's full of pride, and his scheming is so transparent.
Right, like you can just see right through him.
Yeah, it's almost comical.
Yeah.
If it wasn't so evil.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's that pride that ultimately leads to his downfall.
It does.
Yeah. So tell me about this elaborate plan that he's come up with.
Well, he thinks that the king wants to honor him.
Okay.
So he's got this whole spectacle in mind.
Right.
A royal horse, fancy clothes, like a big parade through the city.
Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting.
So over the top.
Dr. Phillips points out how he seems more excited about all those details than the actual honor itself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like his ego is writing checks that
his
body can't cash.
Exactly. So then the king, who has no idea about all this hatred that Haman has for Mordecai.
Right.
He decides that this amazing honor should be given to that.
To, wait for it.
Mordecai the Jew.
Oh, man. The irony.
It's amazing.
It's got to sting.
It is a pivotal moment for sure. And Dr. Phillips points out the weight of those words.
Okay.
Mordecai the Jew.
It just hits you right in the gut.
Yeah. And how that must have felt like a punch in the gut to him. But she also highlights how the king seems to forget about his own decree against the Jews. Maybe it's intentional ignorance, but either way.
Yeah. He's setting up this collision course.
Yeah. He's creating this drama.
And he doesn't even know it.
Right.
And then poor Haman, he's forced into this
awful position.
Humiliating position.
Yes.
He has to, like, lavish praise on the man he despises.
Exactly. And parade him around for everyone to see.
I mean, what does Dr. Phillips say about how Mordecai must be feeling at this point?
Well, she notes that even though he's being publicly honored, there's this underlying tension.
Right.
Because the decree against the Jews is still in effect.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
He might be riding high in the moment.
He's still in danger.
But he's still in danger.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
She brings in the characters' inner lives.
Yes.
You know, it's not just about the plot.
Right.
It's about what they're going through.
It's about their experience.
Okay, so it's like watching a tightrope walk.
Yes.
Right. You're never sure if he's going to make it.
Yeah.
And then we get to the banquet scene.
Yes. Right. Where Esther finally takes center stage.
She does.
Yeah.
This is where she reveals her Jewish identity.
She does.
And exposes Haman's plot.
Yes.
Dr. Phillips really digs into her words here, right?
Yes, she does.
She calls him a masterpiece of diplomacy.
Yeah.
What makes him so masterful?
Well, she avoids directly accusing the king.
Oh, smart.
Which could have backfired.
Yeah, very dangerous.
Very dangerous. And she uses this word sold.
Okay.
And Dr. Phillips argues it's on multiple levels.
Oh, interesting.
The Jews were sold out by the decree. They're sold into destruction.
Right.
Maybe even sold a lie.
I see. I see.
By Haman's wordplay.
Oh, wow. So much meaning packed into
one word. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's really clever.
Yeah.
And it allows Esther to really position Haman as an enemy of the king, not just the Jews.
So smart. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what does the king do?
He flips out.
He does.
Yeah, he loses it.
Power dynamics just like...
completely shift.
Instantaneously.
Yeah. Just like that.
Wow.
And Haman's left begging Esther for his life.
Yeah.
It's quite a turnaround.
Complete reversal.
Yes.
Tables have turned.
They have.
And then we get the poetic justice.
Yes.
Haman dies on the very gallows.
He built for Mordecai. Yeah.
Based on a false accusation.
Exactly.
It's just like the one he used against the Jews.
Yeah. It's like a karmic boomerang.
Yes.
Coming right back at him.
I love how Dr. Phillips just brings all these layers out.
She does. It's amazing.
It's really great.
Yeah. And then how does the king react to this?
He washes his hands of the whole thing.
He does.
Yeah. He gives Haman's estate and his signet ring.
To Mordecai. So that ring represents authority and power.
Right.
It's a big deal.
So he's basically saying, you deal with this mess.
Exactly.
Wow. And does Mordecai take charge?
He does. He issues a counter decree right away.
He does.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about that counter decree. Yep. What does Dr. Phillips say about that?
She encourages us to look closely at the language and the structure.
Okay.
Compared to Haman's original decree.
I see. What jumps out at you?
Well, this time the Jews are listed first.
Oh, interesting.
Not caught off guard anymore.
Right.
But it's also interesting that Mordecai's decree still uses some of the same harsh language as Haman's.
Oh, so he's fighting fire with fire.
You could say that.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And this leads us to a really important topic.
Okay.
Which is vengeance.
Okay.
Specifically, the Hebrew concept of nakam.
Nakam.
Yeah.
How does she define that?
Well, she explains that it goes beyond personal revenge.
Okay.
It's about restoring balance,
mm.
vindicating the Jewish people.
I see.
Ultimately, achieving justice.
So it's a broader concept
yeah.
than just an eye for an eye.
Yes.
It's about righting a wrong.
Right.
That has impacted the whole community.
Exactly.
Wow. This brings up some big questions.
It does.
Right?
Yeah.
About how we understand justice. How we reconcile this idea of vengeance with our own values.
Yeah. Is there a line between righteous retribution
right.
and just perpetuating more violence?
Yeah. That's something to really think about.
Absolutely.
But for now, we've got a victory parade to attend to.
Yes, we do. Yeah. Mordecai all decked out.
Yes.
More extravagant than Haman ever dreamed of.
Wow.
And the Jewish community celebrating.
We are, yeah.
This incredible deliverance.
Just pure joy and relief, right?
It is. But even in all the celebration,
yeah.
Dr. Phillips points out a really interesting detail.
Okay.
She mentions these non-Jews
okay.
who are choosing to identify with the Jews.
Interesting, like converting.
Well, that's the question.
Yeah.
She calls them the Mityahim.
Mityahim?
Yeah.
Were they genuine converts?
That's what we don't know.
Or were they just trying to save their own skin? Now that the tables have turned.
Yeah, that's the ambiguity.
It makes you wonder, right, about their motivations. Were they really sincere?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It reminds us that things aren't always black and white.
Exactly.
Yeah, even in these moments of triumph.
Especially then.
This has been so fascinating already.
Yeah.
I feel like we're just getting started.
We are.
With this story, there's so much to unpack here.
There is a lot.
Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and dive into the aftermath of all this
right.
in part two.
Sounds good.
All right. See you soon.
See you then.
Okay. So Haman's gone. The tables have turned.
Right.
The Jewish community is breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
But the story doesn't end there.
It doesn't.
So what happens next?
Well, Dr. Phillips takes us to the 13th of Adar.
Okay.
The day that was set aside for the Jews to defend themselves.
Right, right.
A day of reckoning.
What does she say about this clash, this battle?
She really emphasizes just how much violence there was.
Oh, wow.
Thousands are killed.
Thousands.
Not just in the capital, but across the Persian Empire.
Wow. So this wasn't just an isolated incident?
No, it was widespread.
She's really using these numbers to show how much anti-Semitism was out there.
Yeah. It really illustrates how pervasive it was.
Yeah. And she doesn't shy away from the difficult details either.
Yeah.
Like she talks about the hanging of Haman's sons.
Yeah.
Which, you know, to us today, that might seem
brutal,
but in the context of the story, it really highlights this idea of getting rid of evil.
Yes.
Rooting it out so it can't take hold again.
That sense of finality, yeah.
That sense of finality.
That yeah. Haman's plan is really thwarted.
Wow. And then right after this intense battle,
yeah.
What happens?
Dr. Phillips points out how the text emphasizes rest.
Oh, interesting.
Like, the Jews can finally breathe.
Right.
Experience some peace.
After all that danger.
Exactly.
I love that contrast.
It's powerful.
This brutal clash.
Yeah.
Followed by this profound sense of peace.
It shows how complicated things are. Yeah. You know, violence and justice.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are big questions. And she doesn't give us easy answers.
No, she just kind of walks us through it. Right. Lets us grapple with it.
And then after all the fighting's done.
Yeah.
Mordecai wants to make sure this isn't forgotten.
Yes.
This is where we get the Festival of Purim.
That's right. He wants to make it a tradition. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Phillips really dives into the language they use.
Oh, interesting.
It's repetitive, almost tangled.
Oh, wow.
Like, they're really struggling to capture how important this is.
Right, you're saying, this is important. We have to get this right.
Yes.
This has to be remembered.
And it is, you know, Purim becomes central to Jewish tradition.
Yeah.
Feasting, celebrating, remembering how they were saved.
It's amazing, right?
It is.
How this one event, mm-hmm. this brush with extinction,
yeah.
shaped Jewish identity for centuries.
Powerful stuff.
But the story doesn't end there.
It doesn't. We also see Mordecai rise to power.
Oh, right. He basically takes Haman's place.
He does. He's the king's right-hand man now, advising the king, advocating for the Jewish community.
Wow. Talk about a turnaround.
I know. From sentenced to death to one of the most powerful figures in Persia.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dr. Phillips emphasizes that it's not about personal gain for him.
Right.
As using this power to protect his people.
To build a safer future.
Exactly.
It's like he's saying this will never happen again.
That's a good way to put it.
And Dr. Phillips connects this to a broader theme.
Yeah.
The need for strong leaders in Jewish history.
Yeah.
People who will fight for them, especially when they're persecuted.
It's about leadership, resilience, and remembering the past.
It's a powerful message and a great way to transition to the end of her lecture.
It is, yeah.
What does she say about the book's conclusion?
Let's talk about that in part three.
So we've seen Haman's rise and fall and Hester's bravery.
Right. Quite a story.
And Mordecai ends up
on top.
Yeah. In a position of power.
Yeah.
How does Dr. Phillips talk about the end of the book?
Well, she points out that it doesn't end with a big celebration.
Oh, interesting.
It's more of a quiet reminder of Mordecai's influence.
I see.
And how he keeps advocating for the Jewish community.
Okay. So even after this victory, mm-hmm. the work isn't over.
Not at all.
There's still this need to protect what they've gained.
Right, to be vigilant.
And Dr. Phillips argues that this ending, with its challenges still there,
yeah.
it reflects a truth about Jewish history in general.
Yeah, there's always a need for someone to advocate for their rights.
It's poignant, you know?
It is.
This idea that the struggle for justice, it's never really finished.
And she leaves us with some really thought-provoking questions.
Oh, like what?
Well, she asks,
yeah.
what does this story tell us about power? How do we use our own influence
right,
to yeah. protect the vulnerable?
Whether it's in our families or communities or even on a larger scale.
Exactly.
This whole deep dive has been eye-opening, really.
I agree.
I feel like I understand the Book of Esther in a whole new way now.
That's great to hear.
It's amazing how much depth there is to this story.
It really is.
So as we wrap up,
okay.
any final takeaways for our listeners?
Well, I think the biggest one is that even the smallest details can matter.
Oh, yeah. You were saying that before.
Right. Like Dr. Phillips showed us.
With the crowns and the...
Yes, the crowns, the Hebrew words.
Right. Those can unlock deeper meaning.
Exactly. Like hidden motivations.
So she's given us tools to really understand this text.
I think so.
And then also this idea that justice is rarely simple.
Right. The Book of Esther really grapples with that.
Yeah. With vengeance, retribution.
Those tough choices people face.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes us think about our own beliefs about justice.
It does.
How would we respond in these situations?
Right.
But then ultimately, there's this message of resilience.
Yes, absolutely.
The Jewish community facing annihilation, but finding a way to survive.
And thrive.
It's a story of courage and hope.
And faith.
Yeah, even in the darkest times, there's always possibility for redemption.
I love that.
Well, on that note, we've reached the end of our deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
It has. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I hope everyone listening has enjoyed this exploration as much as we have.
I hope so.
Keep exploring, keep learning, and we'll see you next time.